Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in to yet another episode of the Let Good Things In show. As always, I am super excited to be bringing you today's guests. And before we dive in, just one quick thing. If you're loving the show, please head on over to Apple or iTunes or whatever it is that it's called. You know what I'm talking about. And leave me a review so more people can find the show. And I also wanted to say thank you to all of my listeners out there. I'm so grateful for you. And if you'd like to connect, please send me an email, amanda@amandaacker.com. My name is spelled, well, my last name rather is A-C-K-E-R. I'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on the show, or maybe you have some tips or suggestions for me. Please send them my way. I would be over the moon to hear from you. But anyways, let's get into today's episode. Today, I had the pleasure of having an amazing conversation with Victoria Volk. Victoria of the Unleashed Heart is a creative and strategic intuitive guide who connects hurting hearts with their authentic soulful selves to release suffering and thrive. Victoria is a self-published author, advanced certified grief recovery specialist, creator and podcast host of Grieving Voices, and I don't know how to say this one, but the word is USUI, and it's spelled USUI, and Karuna Reiki Master. She's also a UMAP certified coach and end-of-life doula. She aims to use her strengths and skills through a variety of offerings to help those struggling with loss go from surviving to thriving. Wow. Victoria is an amazing human, and she's done so much throughout her entire life, and she's been through a lot too. So make sure to listen to this episode to hear her story and what she's been through and how she got all these amazing certifications and what she's doing out in the world. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hi, Victoria. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Thank you, Amanda. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So just to start things off, could you just tell us your story and how you got to be where you are today?
Well, the nutshell of it is I'm a child griever. My father passed away. He died slowly of cancer over the course of 2 years. I was six when he was diagnosed. He passed away when I was eight. And after that, I experienced sexual abuse at the hands of a family member. Not family member, excuse me, a friend of the family. And that led into my early teens, early adulthood, abusing alcohol. And that was my vice, among other things. But alcohol has got me into a lot of situations that were dangerous.
Yeah.
And my life was really a train wreck, and I was in a relationship that was pretty toxic. I was looking for a way out, but I also wanted a better life for myself. So I joined the military.
Oh, wow.
And, I should have gone active duty. Like I think back now I should have, but, I joined the National Guard.
Okay.
And that was the one thing really that helped me gain confidence, because I didn't have confidence ever. I saw myself in a way that I had never seen myself. I was physically fit, where growing up, I was always picked last.
Me too.
Had two left feet.
Right?
Yeah. Like I was not Sporty Spice. Okay. And so I was the artsy fartsy kid, I was in speech competition.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, things like that. But sports wasn't my thing. I tried, but failed miserably.
Yeah.
So that really brought out a different side of myself that I had never seen before. And I gained a lot of confidence up from that. But with that, I hadn't dealt with any of that trauma before.
Yeah.
And And then once I turned 21 is when I discovered how alcohol can really be a Band-Aid and a soother.
It sure can.
Yeah. And it took several years of my life falling apart, but my husband and I getting together is really what transformed things for me in the beginning. He was grounding for me. He was everything I had never had in my life. My support system, encourager, just really kind of the knight in shining armor.
Yeah.
Too good to be true, but he really was just good for me. But it was a prayer that I asked. And we had been friends, actually. We had been friends for 7 years.
Wow.
Never dated or anything. Never even looked at him as like boyfriend, husband material. like he never looked at me that way. Although he did tease me all the time.
That's a tell.
Yeah. But yeah, he changed my life. We ended up getting married. Ended up deploying with the military. He was also in the military. And have a family now and things like that. But I had another loss. Actually, I had a midlife unraveling because my youngest started kindergarten and I realized my identity. My kids are now 16, 15, and 13. I had a very close in age. And at the time when we had our children and they were all young, my husband commuted a lot. So he wasn't home very much for the first several years of our parenthood years, young children. So I was in the trenches of motherhood and very much felt alone. And so my identity was wrapped in my children. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until my youngest started kindergarten where I had started a business actually too. In the meantime, I have a photography business and that brought me a lot of fulfillment, but yet brought up a lot of my insecurities, as parenting does too. It brings up everything that you've never dealt with.
Right.
So does entrepreneurship brings up everything you've never dealt with. And then my youngest started kindergarten. So all this stuff just kind of came to a head when she was leaving me, I felt like, you know, like she no longer needed me in the way that I wanted to be needed, right? Or used to be needed. And that really set me off on my personal development, where I felt like, why do I feel so damn screwed up? I dealt with postpartum after my second child. It was worse with my third. I actually had some health complications with my third. I had to get iron infusions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my iron just really got really low. So I was exhausted all the time. It was just a really, like 2014 was like my midlife awakening, I guess. And I didn't buy a Camaro or anything like that. But I did spend days in my robe, unshowered, and feeling really miserable in my own skin. And I bought programs and, you know, Tony Robbins became like my
good old Tony Robbins.
I got a life coach and, you know, I was really just digging into who I was because like I didn't even know who I was.
Yeah.
Grief had consumed my life for so many years, most of my life, that I didn't recognize myself. I didn't even know who I was before grief. I really didn't. And so that's really what set me on this journey. And like in 2017, 2018, I had written a book. I started a personal blog, which led to a book.
Nice.
And then I had another loss in my life that kind of opened up a can of worms. Because when my father passed away, it wasn't just my dad I lost. I lost that entire family. Mm. That's just what happened. They were no longer in our lives. And my mom had quickly remarried and that was a volatile relationship, toxic, you could say. And so anyway, there was a lot of things at play. And, but what changed my life was that other loss and me realizing that, oh my gosh, like I have a lot of crap I've never dealt with. I thought I was okay because I really was. I really did think I was okay. I wrote a book and I had all this awareness with all these programs and life coaching and things that I was doing, but I was not okay. And I went to Google.
Oh, good old, there's Google.
Good old Google. Actually, now I use DuckDuckGo, but anyway.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo. No tracking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, and I found grief recovery. And that's essentially what changed my life. Because I had tried hypnotherapy and different things before. But this is really the one program that addressed the grief.
Yeah.
Directly. And it was actionable. It's evidence-based action steps. And that's really what I needed in my life. So I got certified, went through the program myself and got certified. And it's like my life has never been the same. I ended up finding Reiki ended up finding me as came after that. I'm a Reiki master. It's led to UMAP coach. I'm a certified UMAP coach now as well. It led to me, my podcast, like everything that I have done since addressing my grief and everything I've accomplished has been because I addressed my grief.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. So I just want to rewind just a smidge here. So when you were drinking and all the time, how did you move past that? Like, did you do any kind of addiction? I don't want to say addiction, but alcohol recovery? Or did you just say, you know what, I can't have this in my life anymore and just kind of put it down? How did that work for you?
Actually, so I knew every drink special every night of the week.
Wow.
I did. And I should have lost my job. I almost had my license suspended, being in accidents and speeding tickets. By the grace of God, that none of those things happened, though. And then I met my husband. But the one thing that did not change was I had not dealt with my grief.
Yeah.
So I still used alcohol as a coping mechanism for when I felt anxiety in my body. And I'm an empath. I'm a Pisces. It's a double whammy. And so I never understood. I was always called a crybaby.
Yeah.
That's what we, and as adult, as parents, when you say that to your child, like quit being a crybaby or, you're really teaching your children to not express their sadness. And so I would hide to cry under the bed, in the closet, kitchen cupboard.
Wow.
I learned to grieve alone. And that's one of the myths of grief, is to grieve alone. But, and no fault to my mom. We don't come out of the womb knowing how to communicate about grief, right? We don't know how to help our children through grief, especially as my mother was around my age, a grieving widow. And I was the youngest of four siblings.
Wow.
So it was a lot for her.
Yeah.
So I have compassion, for her experience. But yeah, we don't come out of the womb knowing what to do. But alcohol was still something I resorted to when I would be out in public and I felt uncomfortable and I felt everybody's energy and everybody's stuff. And I could never feel like I could. I didn't know myself really either. And so I never knew I didn't know how to behave.
Yeah.
When I was around people and I had all this other stuff I hadn't dealt with. Right. So it wasn't until honestly in the last couple years, because even as a mother, like I said, I'll circle back to what I said, how it brings up all your insecurities.
It does. It definitely does.
Yeah. I haven't talked about this a whole lot, but I think I'm becoming more open about it. But I would have two beers. I love to grill. I'm the griller in the house. So I would be having a beer while I'm grilling. And by the time I sat to sit with my kids, because my husband was gone, he was traveling with work. by the time we would sit down, or he was working late once he changed jobs. But by the time it was time to eat, I would already have a buzz going. Mm. You know, and I wouldn't drink just a glass of wine. I would drink the bottle of wine.
Right.
But I justified it in my head. It's a small bottle. Yeah. You can only get like three or four glasses anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, but it was never enough to just drink one glass. It was never enough to just go to the bar and just have one.
Yeah.
In fact, that was kind of a running joke in my friend circle. I'll meet you just for one. Ha ha ha. We know it's not just one, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, it was always something I resorted to feel comfortable in my own skin. Skin that I didn't really know. I just didn't know how to be me. And it wasn't until a bender of being in front of the toilet, puking my guts out again, because I got sick every single time and I'd be a pile of shit for 2 days. Can I swear?
Oh, yeah. 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 Please do.
I'd be a pile of shit for 2 days. And my kids grew up seeing me this way. And it wasn't until, again, after grief recovery and working through a lot of relationships, because I continue to do the work. It's not just one and done. We have many relationships that we need to work through. Yes. Living and dead, people who are living and dead. Because often the people living in our lives create the most grief for us.
It's very true.
Yeah, because it's ongoing, right? Yeah. That person, unless you can completely cut them off out of your life, sometimes that's not really an option.
Yeah.
And that relationship can, and even if the person has died, that relationship still continues, right? You can still be angry. You can still be angry. You can still carry resentment, which is poison that you take hoping they die, even if they already died,
yeah.
Right? But you're still, you know, you're only hurting yourself. So it wasn't until that next morning where I'm just like, what am I doing? I was part of a mastermind actually at that time. And this one was talking about going out the night before with her husband. And she had asked herself, why do I think I need to drink at this event? And she was recognizing that I feel like I need to drink because I don't even know how, same thing.
Yeah.
Like her, she gave voice to the experience I was feeling, but I didn't recognize it. And it was her sharing that I asked myself then, why do I think I need to drink?
Yeah.
And the answer, I couldn't come up with a good one.
Right. Or you just keep making those excuses. I know like how you're saying like in social situations, like drinking was my go-to as well. Like, because I don't know how to be social. I was always the shy, reserved, like didn't even like look up person. But if I'm going to be put in a situation where I know there's going to be people, I found out at a young age, well, man, drinking makes me the life of the party. Let's go.
Yes.
You know, that's... Same. What I did, you know, so that's very relatable because I think a lot of us experience that even with other substances, you know, because you want to be accepted. You want people to like you, right? Like, so if I drink, then I'm going to be more social and then I'll be really funny and people are really going to like me. Meanwhile, you're making an ass out of yourself, but who cares? We're all wasted. But then the next day you're reminded of, do you remember like what you did last night? And that's like the worst sentence you could hear sometimes. You're like, I'm not sure, you know, like I'm not sure if I want you to even tell me, you know. So that's very true. I think a lot of us experience that.
And as a parent, your kids get older and they see you.
Yep.
And so actually that day I decided I'm done. And I quit drinking. I decided that day I was done.
Wow.
Coincidentally, that morning, before I even told my husband that that was my decision, he told me after I told him, well, our son told me today that he doesn't think you're a very good role model.
Oh, that's heart-wrenching.
Right? But it was true. He didn't tell me that. My son didn't tell me that, you know, but I knew it. It was true. Like, if I don't want my son to fall into that same trap that I had been in. I need to emulate and be the adult, mm-hmm. right, of the relationship and show that it's possible that you don't need alcohol to be comfortable in your own skin. Like, you don't need it.
Yeah.
And so that really my kids and it was the mirror I needed.
Yeah.
And I quit for almost 2 years.
Good job. Congrats.
Yeah. But then I'm not going to say, see, to me, it's like, well, I didn't have a problem. You know what I mean? And that's where so many might think. It's like, I had a binge drinking problem.
Right.
So when I drank, I drank. And, but I never looked at myself like an alcoholic. Mm. But what alcoholic does, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. We don't.
Even though it was creating issues in my life, and I knew that, and I was making choices in my life that were not sometimes safe. I just had this reckoning that day. And when I drink now, or when I have, which is rare, it's with intention. And I go into the situation beforehand. What is my intention here? And now I can have just one.
Wow, that's impressive.
But I actually, what helped me too was that I actually worked. So in grief recovery, the beautiful thing about it is it doesn't just apply to relationships with people. You can apply it, the tools and the knowledge that you gain in grief recovery, to anything. And because addiction is a relationship, mm-hmm. to that substance, I actually used grief recovery and applied it to my relationship with alcohol. Mm. And I could see how it progressed over the years, how I connected the dots of what was happening in my life, what I was experiencing, what I was going through. And I literally saw it in black and white in front of my face. And so that really is what helped me. I made that decision, but then I followed it up with an action-based support system for myself,
yeah.
to stick to it for as long as I did, and to maintain a relationship with it that feels good to me and not shameful or filled with guilt, which as women, guilt is like, is a word we need to eradicate. It's guilt is an intent to do harm. I did not intend to do harm to anybody when I got in, you know, when I drank too much, yeah. right? But the law doesn't care about that either, right?
Right, certainly doesn't.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, my life has been changed because of grief recovery in many ways.
So what would you tell someone who may be listening who is going through grief that they feel like they're stuck in a really dark place and they don't know, you know, what to do to feel better, and maybe they're, you know, drinking or using drugs? Like, what would you tell somebody who may be going through that?
It really takes self-awareness and some self-introspection. You know, trauma is what happens, but grief is what's left. Mm-hmm. And really, you have to address the grief. And people might say, I buried it. I don't want to go there. I don't have to deal with it. And you don't. But when you can, when you keep doing the same thing, you keep getting the same result. And when you keep trying the same thing that isn't working, you keep getting the same result. So unless you learn new tools, new knowledge, challenge your beliefs, not only about yourself, but what you believe to be true about alcohol, or what you believe to be true about love or money, or all of these aspects of life that we learn in childhood, right? Yeah. We get these belief systems in childhood that aren't necessarily our own. Like, we wouldn't choose those things, but because they've been ingrained in us, we don't even know what we believe, really.
Yeah.
So challenging these thought patterns that have been passed down in these belief systems helps you to clear, and dealing with the grief, you really become much clearer. You see yourself more clearly. You see others more clearly. And you make decisions in your life from a less of an emotional place.
Yeah. Yeah, because I...
Not fear-based.
Yeah, because fear, you know, that... I'm glad you brought up fear too, because I think sometimes when we're going through something or we're grieving, you know, we have that fear of, you know, well, if I confront this and I do the work, you know, something bad might happen. Or what if, you know, I can't handle it? You know, because that's always my fear, at least. Like when I've been through a lot of shit in my life, and a lot of times, like certain situations, I'll be talking to my husband, like, wait, I don't, let's not, like, I can't right now. And he'll be like, no, like you have to, you know, but that's really scary. So how were you, like, you know, did you have that fear when you started working through your grief and, you know, getting the help that you needed to overcome and be able to show up as the best version of yourself? And how did you kind of work through that?
I had gotten to the point where I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm. I got sick and tired of knowing that I was meant for more, but always feeling like I was always coming up short in my life. And I knew that my sticking points had everything to do with me. Nothing was, you know, and this is the thing, we think life happens to us, at us. Mm-hmm. And I was a victim. I was a victim in my own story, and I repeated my story to whomever would listen. Oh, that's not entirely true, because I actually stuffed everything down.
Yeah.
but I projected it, right? I projected all of my pain and all of my, you know, I was overly sensitive. I would make a mountain out of a molehill. Mm-hmm. And that kept people at a distance. I wasn't connected to myself, so I couldn't connect deeply with other people. That kept me safe.
Yeah.
Because if I don't let you get close to me, you can't hurt me.
Right.
Right. So it was really just me just sick and tired of not fulfilling this deep seated purpose I felt in myself to help people, to be a helper. And I could not help anybody until I helped myself. Is we can't sit with people in their pain. We can't be there for others. We can. Let me rephrase that. We can only sit with others in their pain or help others to the capacity at which we have helped ourselves.
Mm. I like that. Yeah, that's true. You know, because, you know, before doing that work, you know, like, so let me ask you about, like, your husband. So you said when you met him, like, he was basically your knight in shining armor, and that's what I call mine too. And mine met me, and, well, not meet me. That's a weird story as well. But we got together when I was amidst a storm, a big, heavy fucking storm. So it was hard for me to accept his love. So I was rejecting mm-hmm. him. I was finding flaws mm-hmm. in him that didn't exist, you know? And did you experience that, you know, with your husband, since I know you were still in that turmoil stage, you know, how were you able to accept his love and allow him to be that strong person that you needed in your life?
I didn't. Mm-hmm. He was relentless. And that's really what it was, because I, exact same thing. Like, I'm just like, nope. I would come up with every excuse in the book. I'm damaged goods. Trust me, you don't want to be with me. Yep. You're too good for me. You're going to just figure out that I am too much for you and you'll leave anyway. You know, like all these stories,
yep.
these beliefs that I had about myself and my unworthiness. I don't know, but what I came back to though was, but I prayed for him. Mm. That was what I came back to.
Yeah.
I said a prayer. I wanted somebody, please bring me someone who is good for me, was my prayer.
Yeah.
And I couldn't deny that he was.
Yeah.
Or that he wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, you know, because when you're so used to rejection, you know, being hurt, you know, whatever your experiences with past relationships, you know, then you meet this person and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is the person I want to spend my life with. But in the back of your mind, you're telling yourself, I don't deserve this. But then you have this like inner turmoil where like, but I wanted this. So how do I not deserve it? This is what I wanted. And that can create a lot of outward problems, right? Because I sabotaged, you know, I almost completely ruined my marriage right when it started. You know, I was talking to another man. I didn't cheat on him, but I was talking to someone, which could have led to that if I wouldn't have like woke the fuck up when I did and, you know, surrendered, you know, because we are so quick to reject the good things. We're so quick to say, I don't deserve this. I don't, you know, it could be a job. It could be even a friendship, you know. Oh, well, you know, like you said earlier, like if we don't, you didn't let anyone in, right? Because if I don't let you in, you can't hurt me. And that's, I lived a lot of my life in that too. If I don't let you in, you can't hurt me, you know? And so now that you're living life completely differently, like I know you said you went through the whole grief, I don't remember what you call it, a grief counseling. That's not it, but grief work.
Grief recovery method.
Yeah. So in doing that, like now your life is exponentially different. You know, how do you feel now with yourself?
Oh my gosh. I have more confidence than I've ever had. I'm doing things in my life I would have never done. Never. Yeah. Never done. Speaking, podcasting. I'm still an introvert. So like out in public, like I'm, you know, I attended a virtual mixer podcasting thing and I still found myself like, but I'm a very good listener, right? So I'm a very good listener, but I'm, you know, I really wait my turn.
Yeah.
not one to like initiate conversation. Right. And I just know myself. I know energy. I know the energy of grief. I know the energy of fear. I know how much I can feel when I'm starting to physically, emotions manifest physically.
Yeah.
Migraines, you know, either we implode or we explode, right?
Yeah.
With our grief. Either we project it and puke it all over everybody else, or we show it in anger, right? Physical violence or in words, lashing out at people, or else we suffer in silence and it erodes us from the inside, cancer and disease and eczema and fibromyalgia, like all these unexplainable idiopathic things, right? Yeah. It's grief that manifests. And my life is completely different because I am completely different. I found myself before grief just railroaded me.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's amazing. What a transformation. I'm so grateful that you had that transformation and through that I was able to meet you and have you on the show. Like that's awesome. But I wanted to ask you too, so if anybody who's listening wanted to find you online or, you know, what kind of services do you offer to the world?
I do a lot of things. I'm a grief recovery specialist, advanced grief recovery specialist. So I can work with individuals online or in person. And I actually, with UMAP certified coach, which is, it's mostly about career satisfaction, but I actually use that with grief recovery because I found that it was the missing piece in the work that I was doing with, when I took people through grief recovery, they had all this awareness and all of this, like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I have all this confidence and but now what? You know, because we gain a lot of clarity in loss. And once we work through all that stuff, right? We address the emotional stuff and now it's like, okay, well, what do I want to do with my life?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so UMAP is really paves the way for that. And so last year I did, I kind of ran several clients through it just to kind of see, and it was the missing piece. And so I work with clients through both programs, online, one-on-one for that. And then I also do just UMAP or just grief recovery in groups.
Okay.
I can do groups online as well. There's also a Helping Children with Loss program, which is for parents or caregivers. That's online as well in groups. And I'm a Reiki master, so I do energy healing both remotely and in person. And end of life doula, still kind of figuring out what that's going to look like. COVID kind of ruined all that, you know?
Yeah, it's ruined a lot of things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. COVID, hashtag COVID ruins everything.
Yeah.
But yeah. And my podcast is Grieving Voices, where I have guests that share their stories and we go really deep into the stories. So
that's awesome. Podcasting is awesome.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I've met so many amazing people through it. It's hearing amazing stories of people who have really, you know, had the darkest days of their lives and through it all held on to hope. And, have come on the other side.
Yeah.
So I'm at the Unleashed Heart if anyone wants to connect with me too.
Awesome. And I'll have all your links in the show notes too, so everyone can find you and connect with you. And I highly recommend they do that. And then just one last question for you, Victoria, and that would be, what is your number one tip for our listeners to allow the good things into their lives?
I think the theme of what we've talked about is this being willing to be open to receiving. Because had I not been open to receiving love when I did, I don't know where I would have ended up. I really don't. So I think a lot of it is just understanding that it takes vulnerability and courage to be open to receive. Right?
Yeah.
Because we don't know there's no guarantees that person will stick around, right? Yeah. There's no guarantee that, but I think if you're looking outwardly for that, you'll be disappointed. They say expectations are planned disappointments.
Mm.
And so if you can just be open to receive whatever it is, there's a lesson there somewhere.
Yeah, that's very true. Being open to receive, that's a good one. It's the one that I wish I would have heard many, many years ago, but I know it now.
Well, an aspect of that is having hope too, right?
Yeah.
Hope that it will work out.
Yeah.
That it, you know, like that life ultimately is here to serve you, to your greater good.
Very, very true. Well, Victoria, this has been an amazing conversation. I appreciate your time and for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy.
Yeah, sure. And as a reminder to everyone listening, remember, you're stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.